So, happiness that depends on outside things and happiness that doesn't depend on anything. The saints are like that. They have their happiness within. Many saints in many traditions. There was a Muslim saint, a lady, and one day she came out of the house with a bucket of fire and a bucket of water. And when people saw her coming, they said, "What are you going to do with this fire and this water?" She said, with the water, I'm going to put out the fire of hell, and with this fire, I'm going to burn heaven." "Ho, ho, you're going to burn heaven." Right? They didn't mind putting out the fire of hell, but "You're going to burn heaven? Wait a minute." I said, "Why?" I said, "Because everybody is just preoccupied with their relation with God because they want to avoid hell and because they want to attain heaven. And nobody is interested in the real thing, which is love of God." So that's a saint. Everyone's got some love for something. Love of money, love of dog, love of sex. But love of God. So that's the property of the saints. And it doesn't really matter what tradition they belong to. And, well, one good quality of saints is they don't need so many things. In the old Greek tradition, you have Diogenes, right, who's an interesting personality because he lived in a rain barrel. And he had old ripped clothes, and one day Alexander the Great, right, he was somehow or other very much impressed by him, you know. So Alexander the Great tried to get the favor of Diogenes, and he came and he stood in front of Diogenes and said, please allow me to do some service for me." So Diogenes said, "Would you mind stepping aside because you're blocking the sun?" So, you know, that was kind of a bit challenging to the emperor of the world. So then Diogenes asked Alexander, "So what do you want to do with your life?" He said, "I want to conquer the world." And said, "Okay. And after you're finished with that, then what will you do?" He said, then I will sit down next to you." Diogenes said, "Why would you bother first conquering the world? Why don't you just sit down next to me right now and save all the trouble?" So we see that these sages, they don't have they don't have all these needs. Alexander the Great is the symbol of a normal person who wants to conquer the world, and if not the world, at least a corner of the world, something, right? Whether it's a little piece of land you call yours, or whether it's an intellectual corner, of whether it's a little corner of name, fame, and glory, or whether it's like, you know, a chunk of the money in the bank, or whether it's the world as a whole, still it's the same spirit. You want to conquer the world.
Yeah, let's conquer the world.
But we see these sages, these saints, they are aloof. They don't want anything from the world. Therefore, they don't come to take. They come to give. And that is a greater principle. The principle of giving is ultimately more satisfying than the principle of taking. That's a big and deep point. Lots of people are giving, but they do that indirectly, you know, they give it to get something else. Like, I mean, I may give a donation and then, you know, my name will be big, you know, and all over. Or, you know, like in India you have a very rich family and they're known as the Birlas, right? So the Birlas, they have their money in everything. And one thing they did is they built many temples. So there's a... And the Birlas did many things. They have car factories. And they have in India this one car called an Ambassador. And it's like a model of a car of the Rover of England of 1933. And they're still making it, the same model, right? It's like an old car, and if you drive 60 k's an hour, you're steering like this. No power steering. It's like this. So that car is called the Ambassador. So anyway, said Mr. Birla, he died, right? And he came to heaven and he asked if they would let him in. He said, well, sorry, we have no reason to let you in, can't find it. He said, like, no reason to let me in. I've done so much for so many people. So much I've done. I opened many temples. Yeah, but you built them with your own construction companies and you deducted them from the tax at the same time. So you actually made a lot of profit on these temples. That wasn't really anything good about that. But I did so many things. All right, okay. Give us one good reason. Give us one good reason of anything you've done why we should let you in. Then Bill was thinking and thinking. Finally said, like, well, we made the Ambassador car. So then they said in heaven, well, what's good about an Ambassador car? You know, what's good about that? Then he said, this car makes people pray. And then he said, okay, let him in. So that's how he got into heaven, you know? What can be said? Yeah. So yeah, it's like... so many things. How can we live a selfless life? That is the life of the saints, a selfless life. If we do something for others, then actually we experience a greater satisfaction. Just like parents, you know, they are very happy when their kids are in there. You know? That's the greatest happiness, not, you know, that's it, like seeing the kids happy, that's it. So there is a sense of greater happiness in giving, in making others happy, uplifting others. And that's the work of the saints. Yeah, that obviously takes... if you connect that to levels of consciousness, I can show you a little pyramid. Let's see how good my pyramid will be. Just have something like that. Slow drawing, 3. Okay, that's good. So at the base, we have an animalistic type of consciousness. Basically, survival. Right? It's about survival. For animals, it means food. Yeah? Food consciousness. Just food, and for human beings, it also, it means, you know, earn your bread, you know, you gotta like basically get your money, get your food, get your basic commodities, just base existence, and that's what life is about, right? So let's say survival, nothing more, and just survival for me, you know, I'm trying to survive, and as good as I can, and that's all I care for, okay, and whatever comes on the way, you know, I'll take. It's handy, take that one as well. Comes in handy, you know. Okay, that was my earning for the day. Survival. That was quick and easy today. Survival. Or, you know, an honest man, honest day's work. Sweat. Work hard there on the construction. Survival. So, survival can mean many things. But it's a base way of life. And next level is where we go, where we become social, and where we enter into, we're not just alone anymore, but we begin to enter into relationships. And we care about living in a good social environment, social relationships. So that's our second thing, survival, and we get social. So obviously you can see when you get social, it starts, it can be both, survival and social, both of these things. But then it's no longer you, then it's also, you know, friends, your family, everybody else, they might also survive, not just me. So it becomes, or you know, that can go to my community, it can go to my nation, you know,
South Africa,
it can go to planet Earth, you know, or the universe, you know, or like universes, or whatever. Social. Then the next thing, the next level of consciousness is where a person is not only concerned with life here in this world, trying to survive, trying to live a happy life with everybody around him, but begins to become, begins to inquire, but what is it all about? What am I doing here? So, this is the next level, which is philosophical. Phil will do it, right? Okay. His last name, I'll leave it out, you know. Phil for friends, right? Phil from philosophical. All right, so we've got survival, social, philosophical. And philosophers, well, in a sense, you know, like I was with Diogenes, with Greek philosophers, and Diogenes was a philosopher in a rain barrel, right? And obviously, you know, Alexander the Great was more on the base instincts and not so much a philosopher. And he looked at Diogenes. Diogenes was a follower of Socrates. And of course, he had other followers. Another one was Plato. And Plato, he was quite wealthy. Plato lived in a nice house, and Plato had nice silken cushions and things like that in the house. Right? It was kind of a good setup. So one day Diogenes, in his old ripped clothes, came out of his rain barrel. Then he walked through a mud pool until his feet were like totally dirty. Then he went into the house of Plato, walked all over with his muddy footprints, jumped on the silk cushions, etc., smudged everything, and said, I'm stamping on the pride of Plato. And Plato said, with the same pride. So in this way, they had some brotherly exchanges, right? And it is true that Socrates later came and kind of supported Plato a bit by saying to Diogenes, yes, I can see your pride through the rips in your clothes. So, ultimately, it was clear that at least the kind of philosopher that Socrates was looking for was not just an ordinary armchair philosopher, a man sitting in a chair next to the fireplace, drinking a bowl of brandy and discussing the deeper meaning of life. I mean, when I do accents, I'm not particularly imitating anyone. Right? This is a disclaimer. You know, I'm just enjoying playing with accents. That's all. Anyway, so the point is, Socrates was an amazing person. Because you remember the story, he was different from the rest of Athens, and they didn't really like it too much that he was that different. And at one point, they decided that Socrates was corrupting religious principles, religious understanding, and finally they had a tribunal, and they had this, and they had to all throw stones, and they had different colors, you know, a black one, and if you throw a black one in a basket, then it meant you voted for death. And they voted for his death. So then he got that, the system was that that hemlock, that nice drink, which sort of finished you off quite effectively. So they, he had the day that he was meant to drink it. So, and everyone came to Socrates, his last day, and they came to visit him in the jail, and they said, what will we do with, you know, where will we bury you? You know, Socrates says, it will be difficult to bury me, because first you have to catch me. He understood that he was not the body, and therefore he understood, you know, that the soul is not easily caught. So Socrates, as a philosopher, had sort of figured that out. He had figured out this point of that we're not the body, that we discussed yesterday. So he was there. I mean, on base level, you really got other things to do, you know. I mean, come on, let's be real, you know. I mean, we're not going to talk about that wishy-washy, airy-fairy stuff, you know, like the floating soul and all these things, you know what I mean? We need bread and some butter, if possible. We need to survive, you know, we've got more serious things to deal with than all this sort of, you know, talk of these philosophers. They sit there, talk all day, do nothing, get nothing done, wasting their time, and tell you, not going anywhere. I mean, bread and butter is what we want. So, okay? You can see the different levels of consciousness. Phil is, how is Phil going to pay the bill? That's the question. Yes. Now, so, of course, you know, if you're like Diogenes, you don't have high bills, and somehow or other, Plato didn't worry about it. He apparently knew how to make money as well. So, you can do both. So maybe Phil is doing the other two as well, but not investing so much in it. Right? Because he also sees there is more to it. So the philosopher begins to reach out to another realm. It sort of starts there, you know, where you say, here starts the eternal. And here is the temp. The temp file, which, as you all know, stands for temporary. So, here we are. Above fill, we become more concerned with the eternal. And, yeah. There's a famous book from Hermann Hesse about Siddhartha. Siddhartha, you know, who actually, Siddhartha was the name of the Buddha before he became the Buddha. And he's writing about Siddhartha, who was a prince who left home because when he was young, when he took birth, there was an astrologer. And the astrologer told the king that he was very fortunate to have such a son. He said, but at one point, when he's adult, your son will come to the point that he lose interest in worldly life. And he will renounce everything, and he will only take interest in spiritual life. So the king's like, you know, very worried. My son, the prince, he's the future king. Who's going to look after this kingdom? So what the king did, he made sure that his son was only having a good time. No suffering. So he arranged in the entire palace where his son grew up, everybody was beautiful. There was nobody who wasn't beautiful. You weren't beautiful, you weren't coming into the palace. As simple as that. Right? And everybody was young and attractive. And the whole mood was just very sweet and very nice. So the prince grew up sort of in this heavenly environment and everything was very nice. But one day, as he was sort of, you know, in his 20s, he went out of the palace. He's kind of on his own, without any entourage, without any protection. He sneaked out and he wandered through the streets all by himself. Well, what he saw there was a little different. He came around the corner and there was an old man. And that man was old, folks. I tell you, that man was old. His skin was hanging loose like bags, you know. No, serious. Under his chin, there was a piece of skin hanging almost down to his toes. Yeah. Will you believe it? Fair enough. Yeah, his eyes deeply sunken. You know, his hand shaking. And from his mouth, which didn't have many teeth left, an air came, you know, that was enough to make people faint, you know. That old man, you know. When the prince saw that old man, he said, "What happened to you? Oh my, what happened to you?" And then the old man explained. He said that, "I'm old. This will happen to everybody. This will happen to you too." And, you know, he's shocked. You know what I mean? This is going to happen to me. He was getting concerned. And he started to think about it deeply. And it popped the balloon. It just completely popped it. His whole illusion, his whole dream got popped when he realized that, wait a minute, I have to also die. And then he became aware of all the suffering in this world, and then he left home for good, Siddhartha. And he went to live with the... So now the book I'm talking about. So he went to live with the ascetics in the forest. They were living off just berries and some roots from some plants. You know. They were living a real simple life. And he learned to live like that, to fast and to not worry about anything. Then Then one day, Siddhartha wasn't satisfied. He thought, like, this is just austerity, austerity, austerity. What's the benefit? So, this is not enough. So he came back, and there was, and he met a businessman, and this businessman liked him and said, you come with me. Yeah, why not? He went with the businessman. The businessman gave him a big position, and he took it, but he was detached. He was a director of a company, but he didn't care if he was making money or not, because he was not attached to money. But one day, he noticed that slowly he started to care. They were gambling, and he started to care if he was winning or losing. And he realized, I lost something. I lost my detachment, which I had gained. That detachment had some value, although I wasn't satisfied. Still, detachment had value because it saved me so much entanglement. So he left again. Again, returned to detachment. Gave up everything. And this time he sat down at the side of the stream and he listened to the river and the water. And eventually, it began to dawn upon him that everything, everything in the world is spiritual. And he began to see that everything is one spiritual energy. That's what he saw. And at that stage, he realized there is no difference between me and the stone, me and the water, me and the earth. Everything is connected. Everything is connected, and everything in its roots is part of the same spiritual energy. Okay, now I'm now I have to put it in one word in my thing here. I'm just going to write one. That's easy. So this is, when you go to the spiritual marketplace, have you been there? When you check it out, you know, there are so many. I bought me. There are so many. There are places, you know, where you can go for spiritual life. There's a movie called Baraka. Have you seen? You can look on the internet. Interesting movie. It's a movie.
It's called what, Maharaj?
Baraka.
YouTube.
It's never good writing. Baraka. There you go. Famous movie. It's a movie about nature. It's a movie about divinity in nature. It's interesting. You see, like, all kinds of things of divine in nature, and you see scenes of people worshipping that. At one point, there is this Japanese monk, Zen monk. He has one of these lampshade heads. You know those monks? They have a head like a basket, like sort of up to here. Right? You know from Korea. No? They don't have in Korea? But in Japan. Anyway, he had lamp like this and like a dress, and he's walking in the street. In Tokyo.
So Tokyo, all full of people, really busy, you know, like everybody's going everywhere. Busy street, downtown, center, high-rise buildings. I mean, really cram packed.
Everyone in business suits and go. And there's one guy is walking with his lampshade on and his long dress, and he is having a bell in his hand. And he goes like, ding. And very slowly, in meditation, he moves his foot. And very slowly, he goes, puts his leg forward. And then he does it again. Ding! And then the next step. And like that, he's moving through the street.
That's quite amazing.
I mean, right downtown, you know.
I mean, it could be Joburg, could be anywhere in the middle of a city.
So how can this man be so otherworldly? But he is completely in his meditation, in his... He's just minimizing all this. He's minimized all these levels. No more air? He's minimized all these levels, and now he's here, focused on that eternal. How he can do it, that's another question. But that's in the movie. Another scene shows Ketak dancing. You know what Ketak dancing is? Huh? You don't?
Yes, I don't.
You know?
No.
Who knows? You know, can you give us a demonstration?
It's in the long dresses there.
Huh?
It's one with the long dresses and the spoon.
No. Ketak dancing. You know, you see this scene, and there's all these men in Indonesia, hundreds of them, and they go on their knees, you know, and they lean back, like all the way back, and they go, like, and there's an old man, sort of like the high priest sitting in the middle, and the high priest goes like, everyone goes all together, hundreds of them, waving their arms at the old man, like me, all movements like this, all together, you know, and they're looking at it as like, okay, what's for dinner today, kind of thing. What's it all about? But then it turns out that there are two groups opposite of each other, and one group goes backwards, and the other group goes forward, and one group leans backwards, and there's 100 leaning forward, and 100 leaning backwards, and noises going up and down. And in the end, what it is actually a drama that is being performed, remembering an old battle, the old battle of the Ramayana, the old battle between Ravana, or the demoniac personality with his demon forces, who were like Rakshasas, the eaters of human beings, the man-eaters, versus Ram, the noble, divine incarnation and prince, along with his army, fighting these demoniac forces, and all that is sort of depicted in this old ritual, and there's an amazing energy in it. Amazing. So you see that, you see a steaming hot pool high in the icy Himalayas where there is snow always 12 months a year. And in the midst of all that ice and snow, there is one pool. It is hot and steaming. And then this monkey just goes in there in a prayerful mood. And he sits in that hot water like a sage. And all this abode is an abode dedicated to Shiva. So many spiritual... hints of divinity of a sacred dimension.
Yes.
That is there. So all that you find here on this level, you know, where people are kind of meditating, a yogi who is seated with his eyes closed, long dreads,
and totally
detached and peaceful within himself. What is he thinking of? A cup of tea? What's he thinking of? You know, there are so many cartoons and jokes, you know, like about these things. I mean, you know, the seeker climbs up the mountain, comes to the top, and the old sage is seated there, long white dress, long white beard, and the seeker asks the old sage, he says, what is the secret of success in life? The sage says, avoid women. So, you know, the seeker goes down the hill. I've always known it. Meanwhile, the sage turns around, goes into his cage, and inside the wife says,
who are you talking to?
Anyway, it's just an old joke, you know. But there are so many cartoons like that about sages that are away from the world and totally absorbed in the eternal. But how does it work? How is it possible? I mean, would anybody be ready to buy a lampshade from me and to try it out downtown Durban? There you go. Anytime. They happen to be a sale on lampshade heads today. There you go. Want to give it a shot? Just forget your studies, forget it all, lampshade head on, and just ring in a bell, and there you go, you know, downtown. Ding. And just rely on what comes. She's not ready. Anyway, so we can see that this is a very difficult platform. Not easy. Very austere. We know about some traditions. Like in Tibetan Buddhism, there are people that take vows and to renounce the world. And they go into a cave and they brick it up. And they vow to stay in there for 8 years, 10 years, 12 years. And they brick it up. And as they leave a little tunnel, put some water through, so something to drink. And there's a little hole every day. But they can't look out, there's no window. It's just around the corner, a little tunnel. And every day, people put some food in there. So there's three options. One is you die, then you're already in your grave, so that's convenient. That's done then. Two is you go mad in your grave. Or three is you become sort of self-realized. So that's the idea of this. So people in the world, they do these kind of austerities, yeah, to come to this kind of consciousness, aloof and above the ways of the world, and to just connect with the divine. Many traditions are there. Like I was reading a site of a website of, I think it was Carthusian monks, that means Christian, right? And it said, in their order, they have fathers and brothers, right? It said, and the brothers, they help the fathers to do nothing. That's basically, that's how it is. The brothers help the fathers to do nothing. So that's interesting. Again, this idea of people, wise people, who've turned away from the world and who focus on their eternal relationship with God, and who are living a life of austerity and a life of turning away from the world. You can think of old hermits living in little huts in the forest, away from it all. And, you know, I'm sure that, so all cultures in the world have a bit of that. The North American Indian cultures, African cultures also know some people who withdraw and try for some higher experience.
So here, this is level 4. But level 5 is something else. Level 5 is where we're not withdrawing. We're not withdrawing from the world. We're in it. And at the same time, we are fully connected to the eternal. So level 5, where's my blue pen? Here. It's always a challenge to get it in 5. But 5 is bhakti. Here we go. Because bhakti, you're fully focused on the eternal, and yet active on all levels, fully involved in the world. No need to hide, no need to go, no need to withdraw. Why? Because you can do anything. You can be on Skype, right, as some people are. You can be on Skype, and there are lots of people on Skype, millions of people, according to what they advertise. They say there are millions of people using Skype. Great. I wonder what they're using it for. Well, a certain level of Skype is for, "Hi, Mom, how are you? Oh, it's so hot here, Mom. Yes, how is it over there? Oh, darling, it's so cold here. I'm so glad you're there. Are you well? And did you, you know, yes, Mom. You know, love you," and all that, right? Okay, part is for that. Part is for, you know, money, right? How much, you know, when can you deliver the goods, you know what I mean? We need it now, we need it sooner, you know what I mean? If you want the deal, you got to deliver it quicker, and otherwise you go somewhere else. No worry. We'll do it. I want it 2 days earlier. Yeah, but that's going to cost more because we've got to employ more labor. Driving the price. Okay, I'm sure it's being used for business. I'm sure Skype is being used for many things. But Rukmini, she uses Skype for bhakti. Just see that. Wow.
She's so innovative.
That's amazing. Cool. Like that. Yes. What's wrong with Skype? Nothing. Skype is cool. You can Skype as much as you want, as long as you Skype for Krishna. Skype for Krishna. You want to drive? Drive for Krishna. You want money? Money for Krishna. Love? Love for Krishna. Eat? Eat for Krishna. You know, business? Busyness for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. So that's the key, you know. Bhakti here means for Krishna. That's really the essence. That's the key. That's all there is to it. And in that way, you're complete. See, not like one who turns away from the world to get really elevated. But one who is elevated and is in the world with a simple key. One key fits all. The four Krishna key. You know. Just look at the number on the key, it's gotta say four. Okay? The key, four, and the brand, Krishna. Otherwise forget it. Otherwise that key is useless. Won't open. It won't be the key that fits every situation. But for Krishna is the key that fits every situation. And that is the secret of the saints. Well, that's my topic for the day. Levels of consciousness. Bharaka is not part of the levels of consciousness. Just let's see. I wrote it on the same paper as a separate thing altogether. We can rip it off at the bottom if you want. But it's a nice movie. And you can surely, because it shows all these people trying different spiritual things. It shows the Sufis, you know. That's what he was talking about. The Sufis there for hours. So, you know, if you try that for hours, and so the world begins to look different, I tell you. So, they get into some other state of consciousness through that. Right? And it sort of detaches them from the everyday type of consciousness, which is busy with survival, socializing, and, you know, and a little bit of film, right? But this whole, this turning away from the world is only the beginning. It's the beginning. Right? Say you have just decided, well, I think Krishna consciousness is a good thing. I think so. I mean, I went to a bhakti yoga retreat and I kind of like it. I've been to the club and I think, you know, they got some points and they heard a lot of stuff and a lot of it was interesting. I kind of think it's not bad. Right? Say you think that. But then it's, yeah, it's a party. It's like, you know, everybody's going. Are you going? Are you going? All your friends are going. You're going well, you know. Yeah. I'm going. Oh, great. Let's go. Come to the party. Everyone's doing it. Hey, come on, square head. Come on. Yeah. Just a little. Oh, okay, a little bit. A little more. It's hard to be in the middle of a party and walk around like with a lampshade on, you know. Ting. Everyone looks like anybody home. It's hard. So it's understandable. It's understandable that people who want to connect with the eternal turn away from all these people who are so busy with the temporary. Hey, let's take it away. Yeah. It's like, you know, young forever, 99 still going strong. Okay, so that's why it's not surprising that many people into spirituality have some sort of process which turns away from the world. But, you know, we can go to the supermarket and, you know, get yourself a car. What's going inside? Well, you know, on the chart, it's four Krishnas, so ain't no chicken going in, you know. Save the money. Okay, veggie section, stop. Load up the card and fill it up. And at the end, oh, bill, not too high. Veggies, cheap. So, in this way, I say, like, yeah, but you know, I need some power. I mean, I need some strength.
you know what I mean? I need some food, you know, I guess some muscle.
Elephants are vegetarians.
Just that you know.
What?
Yeah. Elephants are vegetarians. Right? Amongst the strongest of animals. Good. As vegetarian as anything. Yeah, there you go. So, like, there's... Who says that by being a vegetarian, you have to be weak and not strong? So, anyway, the point is, for Krishna is a way of life. A way of life that you can just function with in the world. And it's the path of the saints. A simple path. Or to do it, you need to do something. Without chanting Hare Krishna, can't do it. No way. Because everybody else is going in a different direction. Can you go against the current? For how long? Only if you have a powerful engine. Then you can. A ship goes against the current with a powerful engine. How? Our engine is the Mahamantra. A powerful engine that gives us strength to go our own course. And that's what real living is. You know, can you imitate animals? Maybe you can. Let's see. Can you say
no,
1 minute. Okay, there was some trying. At the count of three, I want everyone to say it all together. Okay, take a good breath. There we go. 1, 2, 3. Let's see. I heard a sheep. I heard a sheep. There you go. Yeah. Very convincing. You did a good job there. It's like, that's what sheep do, you know? All together, same sound, but a little different. See, you need some individuality, and you look a left, and you look a right, but you make it sure it's not a too different, you know? A little different. A little shade of something different, but for the rest, everyone the same. Me. So, yes, it's hard to be real. It's hard to be yourself. It's hard to be different from everybody else. What everybody does, boy, we do it too, but a little different. That's what the sheep do. But sometimes, an individual, yes, is someone who says no. I'll go a different path. But for that, you need strength. That is the path of the saints. The path that is followed by those who get their strength from Krishna, by chanting his name. That's a secret. Open secret. And when you can do that, well, then you are part of everything. Part of the world, part of the whole process. So here, once again, the pyramid, survival, base life, just me, a bit of an extension, social, beginning to care, relationship, me and my friends, my family. But what's the purpose of it all? Phil comes in, and Phil asks the questions. Why? Why are we doing this all? What's the meaning of life? Phil is going for the spiritual. Phil turns monk, the monk who sold his Ferrari. And there is Phil, as you see, sold his Ferrari. What did the guy sell his Ferrari for? He could have changed the number plate and write on it, for Krishna. And could have choked around in that Ferrari and had a great time. Jeez, you know. I tell you folks, in Bhakti you don't have to sell your Ferrari. Now, that helps, I think, because personally, I kind of like my Ferrari. I don't know about you and yours.
But I reckon Ferraris are not bad. What do you reckon, buddy?
So, okay, summarized it all. Here, this pyramid of consciousness. I ran out before time, what to do, such as life. And it's entirely up to you to respond. If you want to keep me here, you have to ask some questions. Otherwise, I'm going to slip out of the door. Give it a few seconds to catch your breath and come up with a comment or a question. Anybody welcome. Front or the back, the wallflowers included. Yeah, you can do it. Just scratching. Okay, well, no problem. You having a good time so far in the retreat? It's okay? Yeah? Kirtan was alright last night? Charlie?
Short. It was short.
It was amazing.
You liked it, yeah?
It was about 4 hours or something.
Yeah, no, it could have gone on a bit longer. It does sometimes. Yeah. It's fun. Yeah. So that's the thing, you know. That kirtan gives us the power. And that gives us the power to walk this path. The path for Krishna. And it's fun to do it. It's addictive. I got to do it again and again. I do it all the time. Got to pace myself because the voice cracks after a while. What to do? Old croaky voice. Sometimes at night, a frog jumps in my throat. In the morning, I wake up and all that comes out is quack. Yeah.
How can one actually explain to the other that, you know, like say one person, the person, the next party is actually quite convinced about the philosophy, right? But then that person, convinced as they are about the philosophy, it's like they're still entangled, or say they don't want to get out of, their enjoyment.
Phil walks in and he gives a good talk and it's kind of sounds good. And I said, wow, Phil, that was amazing. You know, he just told me everything. Yeah, Phil is right. And you walk out of the door and you think, yeah, you know, there's all your friends and there's life and things to do, and then you get home and you say, when are you going to pay the rent? And, you know, and suddenly Phil is far away. Although, you know, when you met him, Phil was great, but, you know, when the old lady wants the money for the rent, you know, geez, I'm not going to get it now, and so on, and suddenly you're brought back down to reality. And Phil seems like a nice dream, you know, for, you know, days when you got nothing to do. But is it practical? What to speak of, you know, like, I mean, you know it's better, you know it's good, but you've got some old habits that die hard, you know. Hey, man, come on, I've got here. Woo, it's really good, you got to try it. No, I don't take it anymore. No. Come on, check it out. Just free. Come on, boy. Can you? Boy Canyon was his name. I've got to make jokes about it all the time. Boy Canyon. Musician. It's the next, it will be the next star. George Harrison. Boy George. Boy Canyon. It's that easy. You know, you meet Phil, but you're still Boy Canyon. Just up and coming, and just need two more gigs and you'll make it. Just need to meet the right producer. And you'll be famous. Good musician. Of course, you know, I told him 90% of Africa are musicians. That's the problem.
Nobody in the fans.
No. No, so old habits can hold us back, you know, when we, especially when we're here, right? We feel, then we're weak, you know. We feel pulled down by these old attachments in our life from before. That's true. So Phil is not enough. Ultimately, Phil won't do it. But when you're with a devotee, see, a devotee has some quality, has some blissfulness. That bliss. And when you're with a devotee, you can borrow that. It is called Chaya Bhav, the shadow of his consciousness. So he lends you some of his consciousness while you're with him. And the result is you feel really like uplifted. And suddenly you have strength and you can do all kinds of things. It's totally different. Because with Phil, it's all intellectual, it's all up here, it's all knowledge. It's all logical, makes sense, I know, I should be doing this, but don't feel like it. But when you're with the bhakta, with the devotee, he changes your feelings. You just feel different. You just feel like, yeah, I can do it. So in this way, therefore, you should stay with the devotees. If you're regularly with the devotees, you get energy, and you get a desire to do it. Then you can do it. Then you can walk the path of the saints for Krishna. Okay.
Another one.
I gotta go.
Just a quick one.
Quick.
Yeah. So Maharaj, how do you? Well, as a person, you will know if this is a bad association, right? You know this is a bad association. This is a better association in order to succeed in your bhakti,
yeah,
as a person, right?
Yeah.
And then, say to speak, the bad association you sometimes face. It could be people you want to involve in the bhakti.
Oh, well, yeah, you know, okay, you know, like, yeah, you know, I mean,
I got a beat bag now, you know, it's pretty cool, got it, last week, first beat bag, and really enjoying it, you know, got beats inside too, I mean, I bought like pretty cool ones, you know, been used by some old Baba for like 300 years, you know, before he finally gave his body, so they're powerful beats. And I'm chanting on them, and I'm ready to take on the world, you know. So I've decided today to go to the prostitutes to preach.
Hi, guys.
Come in. And you come in. And there's the lounge, and the girls are sitting on the sofa. And you're going to tell them all about Krishna. Because you want to save some souls, is it? But unfortunately, get a little distracted when you're in a place like that. So, we should not immediately think that we can just turn the whole world around. The world can also turn us around. Same with old friends. I want to save my old friends, you know. They want to save you also. Who's going to save who?
It's true, yeah. It's like, no, back to thank you. Like, we couldn't speak.
Yeah, I gotta go. And you need some time off anyway. I mean, it looks like a full-on program, is it? Pretty packed. With lots of stuff. Huh? I guess as students you can take it, is it? Sitting and hearing.
Yeah, it is. Now.
Huh? Anyway, you're a tough bunch, you know, going through all these lectures and all this. I hope you're having a good time. So let's go out, get some fresh air, and take a break. I think you deserve it, and I'm gonna move on to other things.